Welcome to episode 100 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for Thursday, July the 10th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's 100th episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, you're going to have to allow me a little bit of time to reminisce over the last 100 shows in 2.5 years. Following that, we will get into the news, starting with road rage in Los Angeles that injures 2 cyclists, some Tour de France news, and of course, we're going to talk about Floyd Landis. Following the news, it's finally time for the Garmin Edge 705 review you've all been waiting for. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, providing digital versions of tens of thousands of audiobooks for download to your computer, iPod, or MP3 player. For your free audiobook, sign up today at audiblepodcast.com/cycling. We thank Audible for their support. Well, welcome to episode 100 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. For those of you who have been with me since episode number 1, you know how this show has evolved over time. Originally, it was a sort of every once in a while, maybe once a month show. I then went to every week. I've gone to 2 Interbike trade shows that I've covered for the Fredcast. I've covered 2 tours of California. This will be my 2nd year of doing a daily tour podcast for the Tour de France. Unfortunately, over the last year or so, I haven't quite been able to get out the weekly show that I would like to, but I am trying to work out some revenue models where I can make that work for me. So one of the ways that we do that is through your donations. We talk about that at the beginning of the show, or through advertisers. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter has been an advertiser, and now we're welcoming Audible as an advertiser on the show as well. We really appreciate their support and yours as well. We'll have more details about that Audible sponsorship coming up a little bit later in the show. But for now, I just want to talk a little bit about what it's like as a podcaster to be at a milestone like episode number 100. Now, we've talked about before the fact that while this is my 100th regular show, if I added up all the daily tour podcasts, literally moments ago, I finished recording number 32 of the daily tour podcast. We're well over 30 Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcasts. I've done several special episodes, whether that's from the Tour of California or from Interbike. So, you know, I'm probably pushing 160, 170 podcasts that I've produced, and that doesn't even include the work that I've done for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, as well as the American Diabetes Association. So still, there's something special about this show. It's number 100. Now, I realize that some of you that are listeners are recreational cyclists like I am. Some of you are racers. Some of you are just sort of casual cyclists. You go occasionally, maybe you're mountain bikers or even BMXers or even track racers. I've heard from all of you. And of course, I'm not going to leave out those of you who are bike commuters and also those of you who are bicycle messengers. I literally have heard from the complete spectrum of cyclists who are listeners to the show. And I appreciate you, everyone. But for me, as a recreational cyclist, somebody who, I mean, I consider myself, I suppose, a bit of an endurance cyclist, although I'm not doing brevets and I'm not doing the Race Across America and things like that. But one of the things that has always been a milestone for me as a cyclist, and I've heard from many of you as well, was my first century. The first time that I looked down at my cycle computer and in the space of a few hours, in one day, I had gotten on my bike and ridden 100 miles. And I remember the feeling that I had. This was the Tour of Palm Springs several years ago now. It's one of my favorite pre-season or early season rides because typically the weather is really nice in Palm Springs that time of the year. For the most part, it's a relatively flat course, although there is that first 40 miles, which is deceptively flat, but actually is an uphill ride. Nevertheless, I'll never forget the feeling that I had when I crossed the finish line, when I did that first tour of Palm Springs. It sounds kooky. It sounds corny. To me, it was like winning a gold medal, because when I first became a cyclist, a real cyclist, back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was in the bicycle industry, I was a mountain biker. And I had a road bike. It didn't fit me quite right. It was really sort of an R&D machine that we had put together at work. And I, you know, asked if anybody was riding it, and they said no. And so I bought myself a pair of pedals and some road shoes, and that became my road bike. It was stiff. It was uncomfortable. I got a flat every time I went over a pothole, and I just didn't understand why somebody would want to be a roadie. And I really didn't understand, when I read bicycle magazines, why someone would want to ride 100 miles. Now, of course, I'm at the point where riding 200 miles just seems normal to me, and contemplating things like brevets, and would someday love to do Paris-Brest-Paris, or maybe Furnace Creek 508, even if just as a relay team. But these are the kinds of things I think about now. But it was that first century that really sticks with me, and I think about it every time I get on my bike for a long-distance ride. Think about how I felt when I crossed the finish line. I think it was Palm Springs High School, and just sat there reveling in the fact that I had done it, that I had actually ridden 100 miles. And that's really the way I feel about this show. I know that this show has been a long time coming, but for those of you who have been listening to the Daily Tour podcast, I think you understand, over the last few days at least, what my life has been like, Twittering all morning while I'm also working at the same time. And then when I find time, putting together the Daily Tour podcast to give you a recap of the day's racing from my perspective. Nevertheless, being that this is a long time coming, I just wanted to go back just a little bit and think about what was it like on that very first episode of the Fredcast. Welcome to the very first episode of the Fredcast. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Now, you know, when I first started the show, podcasting, well, I wouldn't say it was in its infancy, but it was certainly in its, at least its toddler, maybe at the most preteen years. And one of the things that I've certainly learned since then is the adage that as a podcaster, one should never release their first show, because typically it's a little bit rough, and you can hear that that was a little rough, but still, I love the fact that I'm still using the same intro. Well, of course, after that, I went into just a little bit of detail about what it means to be a Fred. Okay, so let's get right into it. First, let's talk a second about what a Fred is. If you're a longtime cyclist, you've heard the term before, and you're probably thinking, isn't that a derogatory term? Why the heck is this guy calling his podcast the Fredcast? All right, it can be a derogatory term. There's no doubt about it. As a matter of fact, I went online and I checked a cycling glossary, if you will, and they said that a Fred is somebody who spends a lot of money on his bike and on his clothing, but he still can't ride worth a darn. They also called him a poser. All right, I'll admit it. I'm a geek. Whether it's computers or bikes, if it's something that I'm into, I always get enthusiastic about every new product that comes out, and I've got to try it. Does that make me a Fred? I suppose it does. I've got a pretty nice bike. It's got a lot of the latest equipment on it, and I'm constantly upgrading things and just, you know, cheesing after the latest thing that's out there, and I've got to have it. And so maybe that makes me a Fred. Nevertheless, I go on the club rides, I drop people. I do a century, I finish before my friends. So, all right, maybe I'm a little bit of a Fred in the fact that I spend a lot of money, and yeah, I'm never going to be a racer. You're never going to see me in the Tour de France or going up the Alpe d'Huez. At the same time, I'm still a pretty darn good rider. Did I really say cheesing after? And did I really say, all right, I admit it, I'm a geek? I guess I did. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we're not supposed to release our first episode of the podcast. And one more correction. Next month, I will be going up the Alpe d'Huez. So, I don't know, maybe podcasters can be wrong. You know, the bottom line of all of this, and the reason why I'm playing some of it, is because it's fun for me to look back and look at where the show was and where it's gone. Interestingly, you know, it's funny, I remember taking a film class in high school. One of the first things the teacher told us was, the mark of a good filmmaker. I don't know if this is still true, but at that time, the mark of a good filmmaker was you could always find elements of the beginning of the film at the end of the film. Go back and look at a lot of the old movies, a lot of the greats, whether it's, Orson Welles and Citizen Kane. There's a lot of the beginning part of the movie at the end part of the movie. Same sort of thing. Now, this isn't by any means the end of the Fred cast. Not at all. The Fred cast is moving on and moving forward. But what's interesting to me is when I listened to show number one, do you know what I reviewed? Do any of you remember? I reviewed the Garmin Forerunner, and I talked about how it was a great GPS device that you could put on your handlebars. Well, today I'm going to be reviewing the Garmin Edge 705. Long way from the Forerunner, but there's certainly elements of the Forerunner in the Edge. And look at what a long way cycling has come just in those 2.5 years or so since I started the Fredcast. We now have Team Garmin Chipotle in the Tour de France, professional cyclists riding with Garmin devices on their handlebars. I think that's pretty cool. Another thing that I think is pretty cool is some of the things that I've been able to do through the Fredcast, whether that's going to Interbike and getting to take part in activities that normally a regular cyclist wouldn't have the opportunity to participate in, and then bringing those experiences to you. Or I'll never forget riding in the Mavic neutral support car in last year's Tour of California, being scared to death going about 150 miles an hour down some twisting mountain roads, but also feeling honored to be in the place that I was, and really feeling a real obligation to cover it in a serious, insightful way for you so that you could feel like you were sitting in that seat as well. And then there's the opportunity to meet people who I've admired, people whose work that I have been impressed with. And, you know, whether it was for good or bad, some of you still lambast me for keeping the Floyd Landis picture up on my website. But you know what? When I met Floyd Landis, I was impressed by him. Whether he did dope in the Tour de France or not, I was impressed by his abilities. I was impressed by him as a man. He seemed like a gentleman to me, and I enjoyed that. Or getting to interview Saul Raisin. You may remember that I had the opportunity to do that about a year ago when he participated in his first race after his horrific crash. Or getting to meet people like Bob Roll and Phil Liggett, and getting the opportunity to have the Daily Tour podcast introduced like this.
Hello, everyone. I'm Phil Liggett, and you're listening to the Fredcast on the Tour de France 2008. Enjoy it.
Now, I've got to thank my friend Carlton Reed from bikebiz.com and quickrelease.tv for getting that audio for me. But it's also through Carlton that I was able to meet Phil Liggett last year at Interbike. Just the gentleman that you would expect from having watched him and listened to him commentate cycling races. But that's just another benefit of doing this podcast. I launched the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, and I have met some fantastic individuals. Carlton Reed, Tim Jackson from Mozzie Bicycles, Donna Tosi from Kryptonite, Tim Grawl from the Crooked Cog Network, and Richard Mazener from Cyclicious, and all of the other folks, Joe Beer, all the other folks who have appeared on the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. And then probably the biggest benefit of doing this show is you. Those of you that are listening to the show right now, whether this is your first show or your 100th show, or whether you've listened to every podcast that I've produced for cycling, I am really blessed to have you out there as listeners. Your emails, your voicemails, meeting you at races and events, getting Twitters from you, we really have built quite a community, and it is you who make this podcast what it is. All I do is I sit here behind a microphone late at night and tell you about the things that you've told me you're interested in. You know, when I first started the show, again, going back to that first episode, I listen to the things that I said I was going to talk about. and things have changed a little bit. I still talk about all that geeky stuff about the GPSs and all of that, but the show has definitely evolved, and that's as a result of you. So I want to thank you for sticking with the Fredcast for the last 2.5 years. For the last 100 episodes, 100 regular episodes, and all the other dozens of episodes that I've done specially for you. It is my pleasure. It is my privilege. And you can expect many, many more in the future. So I appreciate your indulgence while I gave you sort of my spiel about show number 100. This is a milestone for me. It's a milestone for you. Thank you for riding along with me. Come along with me for the next 100 episodes of the Fredcast. It's time, finally, for the news. You know, there really is quite a bit going on in cycling, in the cycling world right now. Whether it's the Tour de France or the Floyd Landis decision, whether it's the ASO-UCI upheaval, there's just a lot going on. I'm going to get to all of it, but there is one story this week that has caught my attention more than others. You know, in the last few months, we have talked about a deputy falling asleep at the wheel, purportedly falling asleep at the wheel, crossing over into the opposite lane of traffic and killing cyclists. We've talked about a really angry man in Sydney, Australia, who angry because his drive was being supposedly held up by a training ride, pulled up in front of a group of 50 cyclists, slammed on his brakes, causing all 50 of them to go down and get injured. And now there comes this. And this one's just a difficult story to tell you about, and I'm going to leave it to KABC Channel 7's reporters in Los Angeles, California, to give you the story. And I'm going to catch up with you on the other side of this story and give you a couple of my comments on it.
An emergency room doctor has been arrested on felony charges in connection with a car versus bicycle road rage incident that seriously injured two cyclists. Eyewitness News reporter Micah Ullman is live now in the Sepulveda Pass with the latest on these new developments. Micah.
Well, Mark, we're talking about a problem that's just not getting any better, especially along these narrow roads through the hills of Los Angeles. Motorists and bicyclists sharing the road. For the first time since the accident, six-time state cycling champion Ron Peterson looks at what's left of his bike with a shattered nose 100 stitches later.
Next thing I knew, I was in the back of his window.
Christian Storr contemplates life out of work for 6 months to a year with a separated shoulder in need of surgery.
Almost all the way, I think I clipped the back of the trunk and then ended up flying over myself and landed in the middle of the road.
Peterson and Storr were two of 300 cyclists on a holiday ride through Brentwood's Mandeville Canyon on the 4th of July. A popular canyon for cycling, even with its narrow roads. Police say one angry resident, tired of the cyclists, took matters into his own hands as he drove through Mandeville Canyon.
He yelled something about single file. I yelled back. He pulled in front of us and came to a complete stop. Slammed on his brakes as hard as he could.
Storr had no time to react.
I flipped over the handlebars.
Peterson's face slammed into the rear window of the car. He says the driver was angry at the cyclists for getting in his way.
That's like beating your neighbor with a bat after his dog poops in your yard.
City Councilman Bill Rosendahl is now stepping in to hold a community meeting.
We have to find a way to slow them down a little bit, the cars, first of all. Bicyclists have the rights just like any other vehicle on the road, and they need a Bill of Rights.
Rosendahl says this is a tragic example of a growing problem in Los Angeles, unwillingness to share the road.
So we're going to be calling the bicyclists together with the homeowner groups, with the LAPD and the Department of Transportation, and see how this can be avoided and that it never, ever happens again.
The man accused in all of this, 58-year-old Dr. Christopher Thompson, he's out now, but he was arrested at the scene facing possible felony charges of assault with a deadly weapon. Expect a community meeting on this issue in the next couple of weeks. Live in the Sepulveda Pass, Micah Ullman reporting ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay, Micah, thanks. Some California.
Once again, that was Mark Brown and Micah Ullman from KABC Channel 7 Eyewitness News in Los Angeles. kind of familiar voices to me, having lived in Los Angeles my whole life and only moved here to Utah a year ago. I have to tell you, though, I got this email and the alert about this incident from multiple listeners. And when I first read about it, as I'm sure you're feeling right now, I just felt sickened by it. Here's an individual living in, I can tell you, quite a ritzy neighborhood in Brentwood in Los Angeles. Just saying Brentwood is ritzy enough, but up in Mandeville Canyon, man, those people, they live nice. And here's a guy who's driving what appears to be an Infiniti from the video. He's an emergency room doctor in his 50s, so he's probably making a pretty good living. And he's just pissed off at cyclists because Mandeville Canyon is indeed a popular cycling route. It sort of reminds me of a route that we've got here in between Salt Lake City and Park City. It's called Emigration Canyon. On any given day, but certainly Saturdays and Sundays, there are a lot of cyclists on the road. And I know some folks who live off of Emigration Canyon who are not cyclists, who are some of the most mild-mannered people you've ever met. But get them talking about the cyclists on Emigration Canyon, and all of a sudden, they don't seem quite so mild-mannered, and they get very animated, very upset. Now, could it be that in this case, the cyclists were not riding single file? Sure it could. Remember, the gentleman who was hurt said that the driver went by screaming something about riding single file. All right, but if these two guys were just riding two abreast, all right, I can understand it. But this guy who created the accident, the doctor, he was just being slightly inconvenienced. And what did he do? The same thing that guy in Sydney did was he literally could have killed these two cyclists. There is simply no excuse for it. What's the solution? Well, the city councilman there in Los Angeles is recommending community meetings, recommending a cyclist bill of rights. My solution, and one of the things that I've seen a lot of folks talk about online, there's sort of two schools of thought here. There's the critical mass school of thought, which simply asserts our rights on the last Friday of every month as being legitimate vehicles on the road, as we are, but almost taking over the roads in sort of an in-your-face manner. And we've covered that here on the show before. And then, quite honestly, there's my solution, which is simply kill them with kindness. Number one, as much as most of us don't like it, stop at stop signs. Stop at stoplights. Ride single file where there is not enough room for a car to safely get by, even if that simply means that you've got to wait for your conversation until you get to a better stretch of road. Do those things that make cyclists seem like the better people out there on the road in order to try to gain more respect. Does it mean that we have to change our riding styles just a little bit to accommodate, sorry, I'll say it, some of the idiots and jerks out there on the road who simply don't like the fact that we're there? Yeah. But being slightly inconvenienced and being dead are two totally different things. Or in this case, this individual who's got a dislocated shoulder and will be out of work for 6 months. Or the other guy with over 100 stitches in his face and it looks like they literally had to sew his nose back on. Quite honestly, guys, I would rather be slightly inconvenienced than be in that kind of a situation. And the more that we kill them with kindness, I think the better off that we will all be. Now, I welcome your comments on this. Do I think that this doctor should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law? You bet. Do I think he should go to jail? Absolutely. Should he lose his license? Yeah. Go read the Hippocratic Oath. This guy broke that oath in several ways when he acted in the way that he did. But that doesn't mean that it releases us of our responsibility for being responsible road users and good citizens. I really do believe that if we act in a positive manner, it will come back to us in spades. But I welcome your comments. And of course, I wish these two gentlemen speedy recoveries and hope to see them back on their bikes very, very soon. Meanwhile, in the last couple of weeks, there's another Southern California case, or at least a case that has to do with a Southern Californian that has captivated really the world's attention and not just that of the cycling community, and that is the final result, or seemingly final result, in the Floyd Landis doping case, as you will recall. Floyd Landis was the winner of the 2006 Tour de France. He was presented with the final yellow jersey on the Champs-Élysées by the organizers, but that all quickly fell apart when it was revealed that a doping test that he submitted to under the rules of the Tour de France came back positive for testosterone. His B sample was tested, also came back positive, and that started an odyssey, a two-year odyssey for Floyd Landis that has now ended at the Court of Arbitration for Sport, the supposed court of last resort for athletes accused of this kind of a violation. The Court of Arbitration for Sport in this case unanimously decided that the conviction of Landis will stand. Now, in his first so-called trial, which took place last year in Pepperdine University in Malibu, California, the panel split 2-1 on conviction and at the same time also chided the French laboratory for their sloppy work. This panel, however, did something different. They unanimously agreed to uphold Landis's conviction and ordered him to pay $100,000 toward the legal fees brought on by USADA and the World Anti-Doping Agency in this case. Now, $100,000, a drop in the bucket when we're talking about a multi-million dollar case, at least according to sources that say that that's how much has been spent on this case. The question now, will Landis's lawyers appeal even this decision by the Court of Arbitration for Sport? Now, this isn't unheard of. There is precedent for athletes taking an appeal to the Swiss Federal Tribunal, and that's the court in Switzerland that has jurisdiction over the Court of Arbitration for Sport. The only problem is, if you're going to do that, you have to have grounds, and your grounds would be that the Court of Arbitration for Sport somehow contravened Swiss law, and that's going to take some digging by Maurice Suh and the rest of Landis's team. The other option is to go to the United States court system and try to appeal there. The problem is, recently, runner Justin Gatlin tried just that, and it was a no-go for him. Now, the question, of course, is, will Landis return to professional cycling once his ban is served out? Landis seems to be indicating that he won't, saying things like that he doesn't want to be subjected to this system again. But again, as I mentioned earlier about my thoughts about him being a gentleman, I did like this quote as he was referring to this year's Tour de France. Talking about the start of the Tour de France last Saturday, Landis said, quote, "I hope people who are interested in bicycle racing forget about me by the end of the week and turn on the television, watch the tour, and give those guys the respect and attention they deserve." And he's absolutely right. It's exactly what should happen. Whether Landis races again or not, unfortunately, he's going to become at least a footnote in the history of the 2006 Tour de France. Oscar Pereiro is now the confirmed winner of that final yellow jersey in that Tour de France. The problem is, it's going to be tough to forget about Floyd. If any of you are watching any of the tour coverage on Versus here in the United States, you know that they've got a commercial in which they're trying to say that cycling has a new beginning. And of course, they're showing some of cycling's most famous, or at least the Tour de France's most famous accused dopers. Vinokourov, Landis, Rasmussen. It's going to be very difficult to forget Floyd Landis when you're looking at that commercial. And instead of watching the Tour de France official putting the yellow jersey on him, they've reversed the tape and they're taking the jersey off. I do think that that's probably going to be the end of the Floyd Landis appeals. If not, of course, I'll let you know here on the Fredcast. Love to hear what you think, what your thoughts are on the final decision in the Floyd Landis Tour de France doping case. And while we're on the subject of the Tour de France and doping, there is an individual, a high-profile individual, who you will not see racing in this year's Tour de France, and that is well-known and highly regarded sprinter Tom Bonin. Tom Bonin from Belgium and the Quick Step Squad is now under investigation for cocaine possession and use in Belgium. Now, originally, Quick Step director Patrick Lefebvre said that Quick Step stood behind Bonin and that they originally expected that he would be able to compete in the Tour de France, but then the Tour of Switzerland barred Bonin from the race, and then so did the Tour de France, said Christian Prudhomme, the director of the Tour de France and the Amaury Sports Organization, quote, "The emblematic world champion that he is should set an example. I told him that for us, he could not be there for the start of the race if what has been announced turns out to be true." Now, interestingly, the World Anti-Doping Agency classifies cocaine as a stimulant, but it is only prohibited if the substance is taken during a competition period. Bonin is suspected of using the cocaine out of competition for recreational uses, whether that's proven or not. Nevertheless, one of the most gifted sprinters who we love to watch in those sprint finishes like today's in the Tour de France. Unfortunately, Tom Bonin is sitting this one out. However, the rest of his Quick Step squad is there and is able to compete. All right, so if we're going to talk about Tom Bonin and the fact that he's not able to participate in this year's Tour de France, I think it's time that we start talking about the Tour de France. After all, it is July. Today's July the 10th. We just finished stage 6 of the 2008 Tour de France. For the technical details and the real nitty-gritty on this year's race, make sure that you listen to the Daily Tour podcast. You can go to www.thefredcast.com, and there on the right-hand side, where I've got all of my links and RSS feeds and everything, you can find all the subscription information that you need to start listening to the Daily Tour. And a lot of you already know, because I put Daily Tour episodes number 1 and 2 for this year's Tour de France in the Fredcast feed, then removed it and put it back into the Daily Tour feed. So if you want the real technical details and everything from wire to wire of what's going on in this year's Tour de France, that's the best place to get it. And also, of course, my Twitter feed, which is twitter.com/dailytour. It's different than my normal Fredcast feed. But while we're talking about the Tour de France, and before we get into the current status of what's going on in the race, just a couple of things I wanted to mention. And first of all, one of the most dominant teams on the Pro Tour circuit in professional cycling, period, has been for the last few years Team CSC, run by Bjarne Riis, a former Tour de France champion himself. We'll leave the doping allegations aside. CSC, Computer Sciences Corporation, decided not long ago, and I'm pretty sure we talked about it here on the show in the past, that they will not be renewing their contract with Riis Cycling. And therefore, Team CSC was out looking for a sponsor. When you've got a team that is consistently one of the most dominant teams in professional cycling, it's not going to take long for you to find a sponsor. And in this case, it did not take them long at all. As a matter of fact, Saxo Bank, or Saxo Bank, depending on the way that you want to pronounce it, which is the leading online investment bank, has now signed an agreement that will let Saxo Bank become, for this season, for the remainder of this season, a co-sponsor of the team. So right now, you go on any website, it's not just Team CSC anymore, it's CSC Saxo Bank. Next year, starting January 1st, CSC goes away. Same team, same management, new sponsor. They will simply be known as Team Saxo Bank. What's really cool for me, and just blows me away, and I think it's important that we talk about this during episode number 100, is the fact that I found out about this through a press release that was sent to me directly by the CEO of Saxo Bank himself, Saxo Bank Switzerland. He's a listener to the Fredcast, and he's also a long-distance cyclist. He himself has done one of the rides that I talked about at the beginning of the show, Paris-Brest-Paris. So thank you so much for sending me the press release. Thank you so much for contacting me. You and I have a little bit of talking to do, because I'd like to talk to you about next year's Tour of California. But in the meantime, I think that this is a really great thing. CSC and the team with Riis Cycling will continue. According to Bjarne Riis, he said, quote, "With Saxo Bank, we found the perfect partner for the future. We're extremely proud to be associated with such a strong brand and a company that has a great passion for our team and our values. It's been a pleasure closing a deal with such dedicated and professional people as those at Saxo Bank. From day one, we have found a great understanding, and this promises to become a first-class collaboration in the years to come. So congratulations to Team CSC, Recycling, and to Saxo Bank. We're glad to see that that team is going to continue much as it has for the last couple of years. A couple of other changes in the Pro Peloton. As you know, two American squads were invited to this year's Tour de France. Well, maybe as you don't know, one of those is Team Slipstream and the other is Team High Road. Now, a lot of these teams, you're used to calling them by the names of their sponsors. Remember, Recycling, going by Team CSC Saxo Bank. We've got Sonier Duval Scott. All these other teams, Française du Jeu, Bouygues Telecom. We know these teams by the names of their sponsors. Slipstream is not a product. High Road is not a product. The problem is neither of those two teams, because they're relatively new, neither of them had a title sponsor until now. Team Slipstream is now known as Team Garmin Chipotle. Chipotle, of course, for those of you who are in the United States, is a very fast-growing chain of Mexican restaurants. And it's always interesting to me, by the way, parenthetically, that when I listen to some of the foreign commentators, some of the pronunciations that they get away with that you folks won't let me get away with. I mean, I know every Tour de France, there's certain numbers of you who will email me every time and let me know about the words that I've butchered, all these French towns and names of cyclists and names of teams. These foreign commentators get away with murder. I can't tell you the number of British commentators who I heard saying Chipotle. It's not Chipotle, folks. It's Chipotle or Chipotle or even Castaparne. I hear the British commentators calling it Castaparne. Sorry, folks. It's not Castaparne. All right. Sorry. Sorry to go on that rant, but you guys won't let me get away with that, so I can't let them get away with it. Anyway, Team Slipstream is now sponsored. Their title sponsor is now Garmin, the makers of course, the handlebar GPS devices, one of which we're going to talk about today. And speaking of some of the British commentators, I was watching Eurosport UK and their coverage of this year's Tour de France, and they were commenting on the fact that the entire Garmin Chipotle team was riding with Garmin GPS devices on their handlebars, and they just couldn't understand why you would need a GPS on your handlebars, especially if you're in the Pro Tour. Well, the fact of the matter is, as you well know, and we'll talk about in a few minutes, you can get quite a bit of cycling information on those devices, and it makes nothing but sense for Garmin to have entered the world of professional cycling sponsorship. Meanwhile, Team High Road is now known as Team Columbia. Columbia Sportswear is now their sponsor. Columbia Sportswear is fairly well known here in the United States, but I know that they would like to have a bigger presence and better name recognition in Europe as well, hence the sponsorship of Team High Road. So congratulations to those three teams for the new title sponsors, Team CSC Saxo Bank, Team Garmin Chipotle, and Team Columbia. Okay, we've talked about who's not in the Tour. We've talked about who's in the Tour and what their team names are. But now let's talk about the Tour de France itself. And again, for the real drilling down kind of details, the best place for that is the Daily Tour podcast. We have just completed today, this morning, we completed stage 6 of this year's Tour de France. It was the first mountain stage, although as the Tour de France organizers, the ASO, the Amaury Sports Organization, call it, they call this medium mountains. And that's really because these weren't the kinds of climbs that have become famous in the Tour de France, the Alpe d'Huez, Hautacam, places like that. Instead, it simply was because there were two category two climbs on today's stage, and that's the reason why it is called a mountain stage. Now, my contention is that up until this point, it really has been really a game of sizing up your competition. The last stages that have taken place have been the time for all of the teams, all of the riders, all of the directeurs sportif to get a good look at who their competition is, get a good idea of who's got the legs to go the distance, and to start strategizing for the long term. So I really think that over the next few days, as we get into some of the higher mountains, That's going to be the time when the general classification in this year's Tour de France is going to shake out. Nevertheless, after six stages of the Tour de France, here's how your general classification shakes out. And as I read this list, you're going to hear the names of some of the top contenders in this year's Tour. Sitting in first place in the general classification after six stages, it's Kim Kirkin from Team Colombia, one of the teams I just mentioned. Kim Kirkin's from Luxembourg. He's been riding for 24 hours, 30 minutes, and 41 seconds. In second place, another contender for the GC this year, Cadel Evans from Ceylon Salado. He's 6 seconds back. In third place, Stefan Schumacher from Gerolsteiner, 16 seconds back after a stellar performance in the individual time trial in stage four in Cholet, France earlier this week. Nobody expected him to win that time trial. As a matter of fact, everybody expected that Fabian Cancellara would be the one who would win that stage, and instead Stefan Schumacher was the man of the day. In fourth place, another team that we've just mentioned from Garmin Chipotle, Christian Vandevelde, 47 seconds behind our leader. In fifth, from the UK, David Miller from Garmin Chipotle, also 47 seconds back. In sixth, Thomas Lokvist from Sweden and Team Colombia, 54 seconds back. In seventh, here's another one of those names who's a contender in this year's Tour de France, Denis Menchov from Team Rabobank, 1 minute, 3 seconds back. In eighth place, probably the man at the top of everybody's list as a possible winner on the Champs-Élysées this year. He's worn the yellow jersey already in this year's Tour de France, Alejandro Valverde from Castapagna, 1 minute, 12 seconds back. In ninth place from Team Quickstep, that's Tom Bonin's team, but Bonin's on the couch watching this year, it's Steen de Volder from Belgium, 1 minute, 21 seconds back. And in 10th, always a contender, Oscar Pereiro from Spain from Castapagna, also 1 minute, 21 seconds back. In the green jersey, this is going to become no surprise to any of you, Tor Husov from Norway and Crédit Agricole. And in the polka dot jersey, Sylvain Chavanel from France and Team Cofidis. Sitting in the white jersey right now is our best young rider. It's Thomas Lokvist from Sweden and Team Colombia. Now, this year's Tour de France really is shaping up to be a very good one. The field is wide open. We do not have a defending champion because, of course, Alberto Contador and Team Astana have been disinvited from this year's race. Overall, there's 21 stages in the race, 10 flat stages, 5 mountain stages, 4 medium mountain stages like the one today. There are 17 Category 1, Category 2, and beyond category climbs. It really is shaping up to be a good race. Stick with the Fredcast, but more importantly, stick with the Daily Tour podcast for more information on this year's Tour de France. Now, if you are traveling this month, as I often have to do for work, my recommendation is, and by the way, this isn't a sponsorship, it's just a recommendation based on this cool feature, fly JetBlue. And the reason for that is, if you've ever flown JetBlue, you know that there's an individual video screen at every seat, and you get to watch satellite broadcasts. And the really great thing this July is that if you're flying JetBlue, JetBlue has made a deal where you will be able to watch Versus' coverage during your flight, if, of course, you're flying during a stage of the Tour de France. Personally, I'm not incredibly fond of the Versus coverage. I think that Paul and Phil do a fantastic job. I just think that Versus has way too many commercials, and that the commercials get a bit repetitive. However, if I was on a JetBlue flight and I had nothing else to watch, you bet I would watch the Tour de France. So that is kind of cool. Go ahead and check it out if you happen to be traveling this July. Okay, one more Tour de France story, and then we will move on. And this one really is just sort of a call for your comments. And here's the question. Many of you know, if you've been listening to the Fredcast for any length of time, because I've been talking about it for 100 shows, it seems, many of you know that there is an ongoing battle between the Grand Tours. Reminder, the Giro d'Italia, the Tour de France, and the Vuelta a España. There's a ongoing battle between those three races and their organizers and the UCI, which is the professional cycling union who provides the sanctioning for cycling unions around the world and for the UCI Pro Tour. And the bottom line of all of this, in a nutshell, is the fact that these Grand Tours, which are the most well-known cycling events in the world, perhaps, they were upset with the formation of the UCI Pro Tour, the way in which it was formed, the number of teams that are invited, who can be invited to their race if they're a member of the Pro Tour, and who and the fact that they can't invite certain other teams. And so they've really been embroiled in a long dispute over this, so much so that the Grand Tours are not a part of the Pro Tour calendar this year. So the Tour de France, which is organized by the Amaury Sports Organization, the ASO, is not a part of the UCI Pro Tour calendar this year and is instead being run under French Cycling Federation rules instead of the International Cycling Federation rules. And the ASO has done that with several of their other races this year, each time incurring the wrath of the UCI and threats from the UCI, not only against the organizer, but also against teams and riders who take part in those races. Well, now the war of words has heated up even more. Pat McQuaid saying that he thinks that the ASO is trying to form their own international cycling union to replace the UCI. A lot of commentators saying that they believe that the UCI is all but dead. And now Tour de France champion Greg LeMond weighs in saying, quote, cycling no longer needs the UCI. He goes on to say the UCI is just there to stamp licenses and make the regulations. The solution for cycling is very simple. Organizers and riders should create their own federation and take over the sport. So here's my question to you, and really the whole reason I bring this up. What do you think? You've all been watching this dispute for a very long time, as long or longer than I have, and the question I have is, what's your take? Who is right in this situation? Should the UCI continue? Should the ASO and the other Grand Tours band together and create a new cycling body? Should they include the riders? I'd love to hear your comments. Send me an email or send me a voicemail, and I will get it on the next show. I want to hear from you on this issue. People are listening. I mean, hey, if I'm getting letters from the CEO of Saxo Bank, trust me, people are listening. Let's tell them what the cycling fans think about this situation. Okay, so now we go from the Tour de France to the UCI Pro Tour, because while the Tour de France may not be a UCI Pro Tour event, the Pro Tour really still is the big show in professional cycling. And so where we left off last was we were expecting the arrival of the Dauphiné Libéré, which is about a one-week-long stage race and is typically a great prelude and a good preparation for a lot of the teams and a lot of the riders as they prepare for the Tour de France. But as you'll hear, you're going to hear a name in the final general classification and the results for the Dauphiné Libéré, who unfortunately was not allowed to race in this year's Tour de France. Well, winning this year's Dauphiné Libéré, and there's no doubt why he's at the top of everybody's list of possible contenders for the final yellow jersey on the Champs-Élysées. Winning the Dauphiné Libéré, Alejandro Valverde. Second place went to Cadel Evans, also on everybody's list as a possible contender for the Tour de France. Third place, and here's that name, it's Levi Leipheimer from the United States and Team Astana. Fourth place went to Robert Gesink. Fifth to Haimar Zubeldia. Sixth, Cyril Dessel. Seventh, Mikel Astorloza. Eighth went to Sylvester Smid. Ninth, Maxime Monfort. And tenth to Matteo Carrara. Next up on the Pro Tour calendar, the Tour of Switzerland. Taking first place at the Tour of Switzerland, Roman Kreuzinger from Team Liquigas. In second place, Andreas Kloden from Team Astana. In third, Igor Anton Hernandez from Team Euskaltel-Euskadi. Fourth, Damiano Cuniego from Team Lampre. In fifth place, here's a name on the top of our general classification right now in the Tour de France, Thomas Lokvist from Sweden and Team Highroad. From sixth place, Andy Schleck from Team CSC. In seventh, Kim Kirken, also from Team Highroad. In eighth, Marcus Foten from Gerolsteiner. In ninth place, Christian Nies from Team Milram. And in tenth, Laurens ten Dam from Team Rabobank. So with those results in the history books, here is your leaderboard for the 2008 UCI Pro Tour so far. In first place among the riders, Damiano Cuniego with 104 points. In second, it's Andreas Kloden with 96 points. And in third, Roman Kreuzinger from the Czech Republic with 94 points. As far as the team classifications, isn't this interesting? In first place, Team Astana. In second place, Castapagna. And in third, Team CSC Saxo Bank. As far as the country classifications, Spain is leading with 293 points, Italy with 209, and Germany with 195 and 98 points. Next up on the Pro Tour calendar on August the 2nd, it's the Clásica Ciclista San Sebastián in Spain, and then August 20th through the 27th, the Eneco Tour. Kind of interesting, don't you think, that there's really no Pro Tour events during July? I wonder why that might be. Okay, let's move away from professional cycling because most of us are not professional cyclists. However, a lot of us do participate in a lot of different cycling events, whether those are amateur races, 24-hour events, centuries, brevets, all those kinds of different amateur events. Here's one that is really scary. This is about a 14-year-old girl who is participating in a 24-hour race through Bicentennial Park in Anchorage, Alaska. She was attacked at about 1:30 in the morning during this 24-hour race by a grizzly bear. Now, she managed to contact emergency services from the race course, but she was really not able to communicate. And the only way that they knew that she had been attacked by a bear, because imagine you come upon this bloody little girl, unfortunately, on the trail in the middle of the night, and you really, at first, can't tell what's wrong with her. The only way that they knew was what she was able to just barely whisper the word bear to her rescuers. This is scary stuff. I've got a 12-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old daughter. I don't know what if I would do if they were attacked by a bear. This is really scary. Now, this park, Bicentennial Park in Anchorage, according to the news story, borders a state park called, I'll butcher this, I'm sure, Chugach State Park. And apparently, that's where wild animals live. I mean, it's Anchorage, Alaska, for goodness sake. There were about 60 riders following a circular route on trails that are often used by hikers, bikers, and skiers. And according to Alaska Department of Fish and Game officials, it could be that this bear that attacked the girl is a mother bear that had charged two runners on a nearby trail just 2 weeks previously. And that same spokesman said that this girl was really lucky to be alive, and that her helmet probably saved her life simply because when the bear bit her, it bit her head. This is a really terrifying story. There's really nothing you can do when something like this happens. We do, of course, wish this young lady all the best for a very speedy recovery. This is not what she expected when she signed up for this race. Now, I know I said that I was going to leave professional cycling and only talk about amateurs, but I still think of the Olympics as amateur sports, despite the fact that they now allow professionals in. And we had that conversation, I don't know, a year ago on the spokesman, and I was the only one who cared about this. But nevertheless, the United States Olympic team for 2008 for the Beijing Olympics has now been selected. Well, the majority of the United States Olympic cycling team has been selected. 21 of the 24 Olympic team members have now been announced. Included in that group, Levi Leipheimer, George Hincapie, Jason McCartney, Christian Vandevelde, and Dave Zabriskie. Kristen Armstrong, and I don't think anybody's surprised about that, is also going to be on the women's road team. Also on the track cycling team, Michael Blatchford, Bobby Lay, Taylor Finney, Adam Duvendek, Gideon Massion, Michael Friedman, Sarah Hammer, and Jenny Reed. And don't forget that 2008 will be the debut of BMX in the Olympics, and the four-person United States team includes Kyle Bennett, Donnie Robinson, Mike Day, and Jill Kittner. On the mountain biking side, Todd Wells and Adam Craig, Georgia Gold also making the team. There are three more selections yet to come. The United States Olympic Committee says that they will have those announced by July 15th, just next week. And as soon as that is known, I will let you know here on the Fredcast. Okay, one more bit of racing news, and I know some of you bristle at all this racing news that I do, but this one's interesting. You may remember that last year the Tour of Utah was canceled, and there were a lot of us who were very disappointed about that, because it's great to see stage racing really taking hold here in the United States, whether it's with the Amgen Tour of California, the Tour of Georgia, the Tour of Missouri, and with the Tour of Utah. Well, the Vail Valley Foundation also was planning this year in August 22nd through the 24th, to put on the inaugural Colorado Stage International Cycle Classic. Unfortunately, that race has now been canceled. According to Seal Foles, the president of the Vail Valley Foundation, quote, "When requesting the event be placed on the UCI calendar, we recognized the challenges facing us in finding enough sponsorship support. The declining economic picture has made these efforts increasingly difficult, and the final straw came when we were not able to close a deal with a presenting sponsor." The exact same situation, by the way, that the Tour of Utah faced last year. It really is too bad. I was actually looking forward to hopefully going out to the Colorado stage race. It was a three-stage race. The race was supposed to feature a 135-mile road race. It was going to go from Breckenridge to Beaver Creek. Then there was a 72-mile circuit race around Vail Village, and then a 10-mile individual time trial from Vail Village to East Vail. Very sorry to see that this has happened. Hopefully, they will be able to get things together and put this race on in 2009. That would be fantastic. Unfortunately, I've got a product recall to tell you about today. Take a look at your bike. If you have hollow quick-release skewers by Sun Ringlay, and only about 800 of them were manufactured, it's time for you to stop riding your bike and get things taken care of, because the Consumer Product Safety Commission, in cooperation with Hayes Bicycle Group, is recalling these Sun Ringlay hollow quick-release devices. What's the problem? Well, get this. The quick releases can unexpectedly fail or break when in the locked position, which is kind of when you need them to work, right? Causing the rider to lose control, which poses a serious, no kidding, fall hazard. Hayes Bicycle Group says that they haven't received any reports of injuries, but they have received four reports of the quick releases breaking. Now, this involves hollow chromoly front 100mm, rear 130mm, and hollow rear 135mm quick-release devices. They were sold individually or with Sun Ringlay front and rear wheels with model names Black Flag, Disco Flea, Charger, STR8 or Straight Track, Accelerator R3.00C, and Accelerator T3.00C. And as you can imagine, the name Ringlay is stamped on the lever. These were sold at bicycle stores nationwide here in the United States from June 2007 through May 2008 for about $17. And it goes without saying, stop riding your bike, get it checked out, get them replaced. For more information, you can contact Hayes Bicycle Group at 888-686-3472. That's 888-686-3472 between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, or check out the show notes. I've got a link to the Hayes website as well as to the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website where they talk about this recall too. And finally in the news tonight, at 58 minutes into the podcast, I want to pay tribute to someone who passed away last month at the age of 86, who probably gave many of us here in the United States a great love for sport, a great respect for athletes, and certainly a different perspective on a variety of different athletic events. And that is sportscaster extraordinaire Jim McKay. Few in the United States will forget Jim McKay's famous tagline on the Wide World of Sports on ABC television, or will forget the way that he reported on the 1972 Munich disaster at the Munich Olympics. Jim McKay was really a model and a paragon among sportscasters. And when I heard that he passed away, it definitely had an effect on me. He really was something special to the world of athletics, to the world of sports. And although he retired many years ago, knowing that he's passed on, he will indeed be missed. Thank you, Jim McKay, for giving so much to the world of sports, and for allowing all of us to get a new perspective on the world of athletics.
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
And with those famous words, here ends the news for this edition of the Fredcast. Before we get to tonight's features, including the review of the Garmin Edge 705, I want to take a moment to thank my sponsor, Audible.com, for sponsoring this week's episode of the Fredcast. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/cycling to get your free audiobook from Audible. Now, if you're not familiar with Audible, I have been an Audible listener for quite some time. Just like podcasts, it's a great way to listen to books that perhaps you might not have the time otherwise to read, whether that's in the car, on the train, on your ride, when you're doing chores around the house, mowing the lawn, snow blowing, whatever it is that you do. Instead of just doing nothing, why not read a good book? As a matter of fact, while I read Lance Armstrong's first book, I listened to his second book on Audible. You'll find both of his books, as well as Bill Strickland's book, 10 Points, which is his odyssey to try to earn 10 points as an amateur racer, because his daughter, his young daughter, just came up arbitrarily one day with that goal. All of those great reads on Audible. And if there's anything else, literally, that you are interested in reading, chances are it's on Audible. They have over 40,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has it covered. If you want a little sample, a little taste of what Audible sounds like, here is just a little bit from Lance Armstrong's book, It's Not About the Bike.
When I was 25, I got testicular cancer and nearly died. I was given less than a 40% chance of surviving, and frankly, some of my doctors were just being kind when they gave me those odds. Death is not exactly a cocktail party conversation, I know, and neither is cancer, or brain surgery, or matters below the waist. But I'm not here to make polite conversation. I want to tell you the truth. I'm sure you'd like to hear about how Lance Armstrong became a great American and an inspiration to us all, how he first won the Tour de France, the 2,290-mile road race that's considered the single most grueling sporting event on the face of the earth. You want to hear about faith and mystery and my miraculous comeback and how I joined towering figures like Greg LeMond and Miguel Indurain in the record book. You want to hear about my lyrical climb through the Alps and my heroic conquering of the Pyrenees and how it felt. But the tour was the least of the story. Some of it is not easy to tell or comfortable to hear. I'm asking you now at the outset to put aside your ideas about heroes and miracles, because I'm not storybook material. This is not Disneyland or Hollywood. I'll give you an example. I've read that I flew up the hills and mountains of France. But you don't fly up a hill. You struggle slowly and painfully up a hill, and maybe, if you work very hard, you get to the top ahead of everybody else. Cancer is like that, too. Good, strong people get cancer, and they do all the right things to beat it, and they still die. That is the essential truth that you learn. People die. And after you learn it, all other matters seem irrelevant. They just seem small.
Well, that's just a taste of what you'll hear on Audible if you sign up today. And why not? Because the Audible is going to give Fredcast listeners a free audiobook just for signing up. And even if you don't remain an Audible customer, you will get to keep that audiobook. So go to www.audiblepodcast.com/cycling and sign up for Audible today. We appreciate Audible's support of the Fredcast, and I appreciate your support of Audible. That's audiblepodcast.com/cycling. Well, it's time to get into our features, and I think it is appropriate, considering it's July and we're in the middle of the Tour de France, to answer the following listener question from listener Joel. So Joel, take it away.
Hi, David. This is Joel Price. I love the Fredcast podcast. I'm a huge fan and listen to it all the time. One of the questions that I had, and hopefully you'll play this on your show, because I'm sure others are curious as well, is what's the best way to follow the Tour de France race this year with Twitter and online and whatnot? I know you've probably have all the sites handy or in mind, so maybe you can share that with everyone. I'd appreciate it. And that's about it. Thanks a lot, and enjoy the show. I'll listen to the next podcast so that I can find out the answer.
Hey, Joel, thanks for that question, and it's a really good one because it's something a lot of people are asking about this week. So let me just sort of give you a rundown of a couple of ways that you can follow the Tour de France. Okay, number one, and unfortunately this won't be true over the next couple of days as I go out of town to someplace where there is zero internet access, probably no cell phone service either. And that is to follow some of the folks on Twitter who are live blogging the Tour de France. Now, I do that every day when I'm around. The next couple of days I won't be, but I have a Twitter account called Daily Tour. There's no space between daily and tour. And you can follow along on your cell phone, on your computer. Twitter is a really great technology. If you're not familiar with it, simply it is a 140 character or less message that simply answers the question, what are you doing? But a lot of people are using it for things like blogging conferences and, for instance, blogging the Tour de France. So today, for instance, I was giving updates all along the stage so that you knew who won which sprint, who came in first, second, and third, how many points, who was leading for the King of the Mountains jersey. When we got to certain climbs, I gave you details about those climbs, really giving you commentary via text. Now, there are a few other people who are doing the same thing, and I will put links in the show notes. TDF Update, that's the Tour de France update, the TDF blog. Those are some of the ones that I know about. Last year, it seemed like there were a few more people Twittering the Tour de France, but Twitter's had its issues lately with growth. I think they've gotten a lot of them worked out, and I found it to be extremely stable for me during this year's tour. To find out more information about Twitter, go to twitter.com, twitter.com/dailytour, or if you just want to follow the Daily Tour on your cell phone, send a text message to 40404 with the words follow Daily Tour. Again, no space between daily and tour. Now remember, normal text messaging rates will apply, and I'm typically sending out 100 or more text messages for each stage of the race. So keep that in mind. If you've got unlimited text, it's a great way to follow the tour. Now, a couple of other things that you can do. Velo News and Cycling News are both providing live blogging coverage online. Very similar to Twitter, but they have a few more characters that they're able to use. Sometimes it's hit or miss, just being honest with you. Sometimes the coverage is really good, and sometimes you're just sort of left holding the bag and wondering exactly what's going on out there on the road. Now, it can be the same thing with Twitter, too. I try to do the best to give you as much information as I can. I'm sure they are as well. You can find information on both VeloNews and CyclingNews.com. Now, for me, again, I'm not real pleased with Versus's coverage this year, so what I'm doing is I'm not watching Versus, I'm watching Eurosport UK, and I'm doing that online, and I'm going to put a couple of links into the show notes for tonight's show where you can find sources of online video. Now, some of the video, well, first of all, a lot of the video comes from the exact same source. All of it, as a matter of fact, comes from the same source. You're going to be watching the same video, whether you're watching it on Versus, whether you're watching it in English, Norwegian, German, French, it's all the same video. So if you don't need the commentary, then go online to any of the sites that I'm going to give you and watch whichever feed is working that day. Some days, one feed will work just great. Other days, it will not work at all, and you go to one that wasn't working the day before. So just realize you're going to have to jump around from day to day. There are a lot of feeds available, and you can find them in a lot of different locations. One website, steephill.tv, provides you with the information. Cyclingfans.com, channelsurfing.net. All three of those are excellent sources of where you can find live Tour de France coverage during the race every day. So if you're at work and you want to watch the coverage and maybe you want to watch the Twitter feeds to go along with it, it's a great thing that you can do. The other thing that you can do is the Tour de France website itself, which is letour.fr, also provides sort of a live ticker, not updated that frequently, but you can also watch the progress of the race, see who is in the break, how far ahead they are of the peloton. It's a fairly, you know, honestly, of all of the major stage races around the world, I think the Tour de France really probably does it the best of any of them. So there you go, Joel. There's a lot of resources for you for following the Tour de France. I hope that's helpful. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to call me back and leave me another voicemail, and I will answer it right here on the show. Thanks again, Joel. Appreciated your question because I know a lot of other people had that question as well. Oh, and one more thing. I've got to, while we're talking about following the Tour de France, I've got to plug my other podcast, The Daily Tour. The Daily Tour is a daily summary of the day's events out on the roads of France. You can find that at www.thefredcast.com. Typically comes out about an hour or so after the stage, unless work or family commitments get in the way. That's The Daily Tour podcast. You can also find that on iTunes. Well, we talked earlier about the new Garmin Chipotle cycling team and the fact that now that Team Slipstream is sponsored by Garmin, every one of the racers in the Tour de France is riding with the Garmin Edge 705 GPS unit on their handlebars. I, too, have been riding with the 705 for almost 2 months now, and I really wanted to put it through its paces before I brought you a review of the device. But just a quick anecdote. The other day, I was listening to the Eurosport UK audio feed while I think I was watching the French video feed on my computer. And one of their commentators went out and was looking at the various bikes and the equipment that were out in the Pro Peloton. And she noticed that the Garmin Chipotle team's surprise had these 705s on their bikes. And she didn't quite understand why it was that you would want a GPS when you're in the Pro Peloton. The roads are closed. There's route marshals out there to show you which way to go. You're following the Peloton. What do you need a GPS for? Well, I wrote up a really quick email and I sent it off to Eurosport UK. And wouldn't you know, less than 5 minutes later, they literally read my email verbatim on the show to try to educate the public as to why it is you might actually want a GPS on your handlebars. So why don't I give you the longer version of why you might want a GPS on your handlebars and give you the bottom line right now. I believe you will want the Garmin Edge 705. They're going to have to pry it off of my handlebars. I'm really happy with it. Well, let's go back. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, when I did Fredcast episode number one, I reviewed the Garmin Forerunner GPS. I had been given the Forerunner by my family for my birthday, and I was using it on my handlebars. But really, the Forerunner was designed for runners. It really was not designed for cyclists. But I made it work and really enjoyed it. And then lo and behold, a couple of months later, Garmin came out with the Edge 305, which was specifically designed. And by the way, the 205 is sort of its stepbrother. But the 205 and the 305 were specifically designed for cyclists. And so, yes, it did have a GPS, and it provided all of the usual data, speed, cadence, time, distance, heart rate, calories burned, and altitude by using a barometric altimeter, which is far, far more accurate than GPS altitude. And it also had a display where it could show your track of where you had been, and if you had uploaded into the unit a course that you wanted to follow, it would show that as well. And it would even show your virtual cycling partner so that you could race against that person, or you could race against your best time on the same track. The problem, of course, there was no real map, so that if you were riding in unfamiliar territory, you didn't know which streets you needed to turn on. And while the Garmin 405, pardon me, the Garmin 305 would say that you needed to turn in maybe 200 feet, what if the two streets were fairly close together? It really was a little bit of voodoo that you had to do in order to understand the unit. Nevertheless, I had it for a long time on my bike, and I really liked it. But when I first heard that the 705 was coming, and I heard it confidentially from an insider at Garmin who told me just a little bit about it, but told me I couldn't talk about it. And then when I saw the first demo units, well, I knew that this was a product that I wanted to try. Now, when Garmin first announced the 705, a lot of you sent me emails and you said, you know what, David, I understand why you like the 305. I understand that you like having the technology on your handlebars, but I can't imagine spending the additional money for the 705 over the 305. I just don't understand why I would want that. Well, let me tell you about a couple of the new features that are in the 705 that really make it worthwhile. And then I'll tell you about some of the improvements over the 305, which should tip you over the edge. First of all, I've told you before that one of the things that I am really interested in is convergence. I am tired of having multiple devices when it seems obvious with today's technology that I can have one device do multiple things. Example, the iPhone, okay? I haven't purchased one yet, but I love the fact that I can have my telephone, I can have my iPod, and I can have my GPS all in one device. Because, for instance, when I travel on business, those are three devices that are always with me. To only have one would be fantastic. And it's the same thing with the Edge 705. Because, of course, most of us have cycle computers on our bikes. Most of us have heart rate monitors. Some of us ride with a GPS. And some of us ride with power meters. What if you could have all of those devices in one? And with the Edge 705, you can. Because the Edge 705, for one thing, employs the Ant Plus Sport technology. And that, simply stated, is a wireless protocol that allows heart rate monitors to talk to the unit and that allows certain power meters to talk to the unit. Now, right now, there are a limited number of power meters that will talk to it, but I have no doubt that there will be many more in the future. Right now, SRM has a unit. Quark has their Synco, which is a brand new power meter that's built into cranks. We talked about that at Interbike last year. Go back and listen to it if you haven't heard it. It's a very innovative and nice device. iBike now employs Ant Plus Sport technology, and their power meters will work with the Edge 705. And Ceres is rumored to be working on a power tap, which will employ the Ant Plus Sport technology. If they have that, I would expect that we would see it at Interbike coming up in September. So now you've got your normal cycle computer functions, you've got your power meter functions, and you've got your heart rate functions all in one device. And by the way, did I mention that that also includes Cadence? So now you've got all your data in one device, all on one screen, and you can look at all of that data without junking up your handlebars with a lot of different devices. Now we add in the GPS and the street level mapping. Now, again, a lot of you emailed me and you said, David, that's silly. I know my routes. I know where I ride. Well, that may be, but at least for me, I love having the map for a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm going to be honest, I get really bored riding the exact same route day after day after day. And even when I lived in LA and I lived there my entire life up until just 12 months ago, I still was able to find new road routes that I could ride. And it's really comforting to have the street level mapping on the 705 versus the way it was with the 305, because now I know specifically I need to turn right on Main Street, I need to turn left on Elm, and I can see the cities coming up. It is phenomenal, and it is vastly improved. Plus, as you know, I travel occasionally for business, and when I do, I like to rent or borrow a bike that I can use when I'm out on a business trip. I don't know a lot of these other towns. The ability to go online, find a route, download it into the Garmin, and then follow along knowing which streets to turn on is very, very helpful. Other additional new features. The Edge 305 had an elevation display. It would show you graphically what your ascent and descent looked like using that barometric altimeter, but it was really a kludge. It really was not very accurate and it's really hard to read. The new elevation display in the 705 is vastly improved. Number one, it's in color, so it's easier to read. And number two, besides being able to zoom in and out as far as scale, you can now pan left and right along that elevation chart, something that was not in the 305, which would have been extremely welcome now in the 705 and very worthwhile. Another improvement, and the way that you do pan across that elevation display as well as panning across the moving map, if you want to look forward along your route or look backward or look around the route, is the new joystick controller. Again, when I first saw this on the first demo units that Garmin had available, it seemed to me like it was something that would break within the first couple of rides. I've now put hundreds of miles on this unit, and it is still working extremely well and does not seem flimsy at all. I really like the joystick controller, as a matter of fact. Really easy to use on the bike, even if you're wearing full-fingered gloves. So I really do like that. Another new feature, and this is really useful if you go out for a club ride. Again, if you're in an unfamiliar area, the ability to transfer rides and routes from one unit to the other wirelessly. You just have to be within a couple feet of each other. And again, using that Ant Plus Sport wireless technology, your buddy can send you a route from his or her Edge 705 right to yours, and you'll be able to follow along without a cue sheet. Very, very helpful. And finally, another new feature, and I don't know whether or not Garmin is touting this, but to me, this is huge, and it's the vastly improved GPS receiver. One of my complaints, strong complaints, about the 305 was that when I used it without the cadence and speed sensor, it didn't seem to display accurate speed data, and it didn't seem to stay locked onto the satellites very well, especially if there were any trees within my vicinity. 705, I have no complaints. I can use it on my mountain bike in the middle of a forest. I can use it in steep canyons, at the bottom of steep canyons with sheer walls going up. I can turn it on in my basement inside my house, and I can still lock onto satellites. That's impressive for any GPS, let alone one that has to do all these other functions. And finally, one of the biggest improvements in the 705 over the previous version is battery life. When I first took my 305, the previous version, on a Century, I got about 4 hours into that ride, and I was already getting low battery warnings. I have had my 705 go for more than 10 hours, not continuously. Maybe I'll do a 2-hour ride one day. The next day I'll do maybe an hour, maybe the next day an hour. Maybe I'll take a couple of days off. 10 hours of continuous use plus days and days of standby without getting a low battery warning. And that's using it with the wireless cadence, with the wireless heart rate monitor. That is vastly improved battery life. And that is yet again one of those features which alone should make you consider the Edge 705. Okay, but let's compare the previous version to the new version. Now, the previous version, again, that's the 305, was smaller than this new version. And I think that makes sense. The improved battery life, the improved GPS receiver, and of course, the improved color display. The new version is about 1/4 inch taller. It's about 1/2 inch wider and just about 1/10 inch thicker. Not really enough to make that big of a difference. The screen, larger on the new unit, again, full color and better resolution. It's about 0.6 ounce heavier than the previous unit. But again, 0.6 ounce is not going to make a big difference on your bike. Now, Garmin says that the previous version, the 305, had a battery life of about 12 hours. I never saw that in continuous use. Nevertheless, they say that the 705 has a 15-hour battery life. And the way that they do that is the 305 used a lithium-ion battery, whereas the 705, the new version, uses a lithium polymer battery. So technology changes and improves, and then the battery life goes up. The display in the new unit, again, a huge improvement. It is an excellent display, very readable, even in direct sunlight and in the dark. Again, you've got the turn-by-turn directions, which you really did not have with the previous version, and the ability to find by a variety of different categories. Maybe you want to find restaurants. You want to find the nearest restaurant. Maybe you want to spell the restaurant. You want to spell it out. Using the joystick, you're able to choose letters and then find and refine down your search. and recently added in a new software update the ability to find cities. So, for instance, if you are in any town USA and you want to ride to My Town USA, you can simply type in My Town and it will find the city. In the previous version of the software, it didn't do that. And I was going to criticize it, but then they came out with that new software update, and that was really great. Another great thing about this unit, and it's the same with the 305, the ability to move it from bike to bike. I move it from my road bike to my mountain bike all the time. My road bike does have the cadence and speed sensor attached. The mountain bike doesn't, but you certainly could buy one and add it. I don't find that on my mountain bike it's really that necessary. A huge plus, in my opinion, is the fact that because I use a power tap for a power meter, I love the fact that the Garmin and the power tap use the exact same heart rate strap. That is a great thing. A couple of things I don't like about it, so this isn't all a love fest here for the Garmin. Number one, it did route me in sort of a funky way a couple of times. One time it routed me down a street that was a dead end, and it said that it was a through street. Now, you can't really fault Garmin for that. That's really the purveyor of the map data that Garmin gets. But another time, despite the fact that I had told it that I did not want to go down dirt roads, it routed me down a dirt road where, I got chased by a dog. I saw a few cows, and then it started to rain, so I got really, really dirty. So that wasn't a great thing. Another thing that I don't like is the fact that on the map display, when you add more than two data fields, those data fields take up way too much screen real estate. I would like the option to be able to say, yes, I want to have four data fields. Maybe I want to have speed, cadence, heart rate, and power. But if I'm going to add that many data fields, I'd like the option to add smaller data fields so that it doesn't cover up so much of the map. Also, of course, a lot of people are complaining about the price of the Edge 705. Now, the base price of the 705 with heart rate, the manufactured suggested retail, is $499. If you want to add speed and cadence, it goes up another $50 to $549. But now, if you want to add the micro SD card that includes the detailed map data, it's another $100 above that, $649. Prices are a little bit different for Europe, $433 for heart rate and $476 for heart rate and cadence. And then, of course, if you want to add the detailed map data, that still is going to cost you a bit more. In case you're interested in what you get when you spend all this money for the Edge 705, of course, you get the Edge 705 and then whatever options you've ordered. So whether it's the heart rate monitor, the speed and cadence sensor, or the data card preloaded with the City Navigator information, you'll also get two bike mounts, a charger so that you can plug into the wall and then plug into the back of the Garmin. But it's a standard USB cable, so you can certainly charge with your computer. You'll also get a standard USB cable, as well as the owner's manual on disc and a quick reference guide. Now, speaking of attaching the Edge to your computer, again, one of the improvements of this device over the previous one is that when you attach it to your computer, it will show up on your desktop as if it was, well, like a thumb drive. So it works just like a little hard drive. So if you've got some GPX data, which is simply route data that you can download from any number of sites like Bikely or MapMyRide or something like that, you can download that from the website and then just drag it over to the Garmin into the GPX folder. Disconnect the Garmin from your computer, and now you're ready to go out for a ride. It's just that simple. You don't have to use Garmin's proprietary software or their website if you don't want to, and it really is a very simple, easy interface for getting that sort of data onto your Garmin. And vice versa, if you're using something like Training Peaks WKO Plus, and you want to be able to take the ride data and put it into your ride history, you can simply drag it right from the Garmin right into your program. It is a great way to work, and I really prefer that to using some sort of proprietary interface. It's just natural. It's what we do every single day with our computers. And finally, I mentioned that new software update that added the ability to find cities. The other thing that that software update did, at least for me, prior to that software update, I was having an occasional screen freeze where I would be in the middle of a ride, typically at the beginning of a ride, and I would look down and maybe it would say I was going 22 miles an hour. And then I'd be going up a hill, I'd look down and it would still say 22 miles an hour and my map position hadn't changed. The Garmin seemed to be freezing up ever since I put in the latest update, which you can get at garmin.com. That screen freeze problem has gone away and I've had no troubles with the Edge 705. So I think it goes without saying, very positive review. I'm very happy with the Edge 705. I think you will be as well. Now I've got to call Garmin's media department and negotiate the price with them of what it's going to cost me to keep this unit. The Edge 705 is from Garmin. I've got links in the show notes to where you can find it. I think you will like it if you buy it, despite its high price. Oh, speaking of the price, I found the Edge 705 with the heart rate, speed and cadence, and the detailed map data at Amazon for $525. That's a pretty good price. I put a link in the show notes. Go to www.thefredcast.com and check it out. Okay, before we get out of here, and oh man, an hour and 30 minutes. I'm sorry, guys. I just had a lot to say this week. It's been a while. Got a couple of great messages from a couple of fantastic listeners who have become friends as well, and I wanted to play their messages just before we got out of here tonight. So first is Kiefer B from the Cadence Revolution podcast. I've mentioned it before. If you don't listen to the Cadence Revolution, you should. It is great cycling music. It's pod-safe cycling music. He doesn't call it that, but it's great workout music. And I know when I've got a really hard climb or I've got a really hard workout ahead of me, I put on the Cadence Revolution, and it always helps me get through. So here's Kiefer B from the Cadence Revolution podcast.
Hey, David, it's Kiefer B from Cadence Revolution at cadencerevolution.com. I just wanted to wish you a happy century of episodes. I've been listening to you, I think, since about episode late teens when I first got my first iPod. And when I Googled for podcasts on cycling, yours is the first one to come up, and I listen to you every show. Enjoy the news. Enjoy the product reviews. Are you going to get that Garmin 705 review up? I hope so, because I've been waiting to see if it's worth getting it for myself. Anyways, I just want to also thank you for all of your knowledge on doing the training for Sentry training. It helped me out with my very first long ride this season, and it got me through it. Anyways, enjoy the ride.
Hey, Kiefer, thank you so much for that, and thank you for your show, and I'm glad that the Sentry training podcast worked out for you. I've actually supplied those to a couple of charities out there and allowed them to use those for their riders as well. So I'm glad that was helpful. And finally, yes, I did do the 705 review. So I hope you enjoyed that. And thanks so much for your podcasts. Next up is listener Matt. Now, I remember when I met listener Matt in the tour of California, I think it was in Stockton, wasn't it, Matt? And he was with his kids, and it was a lot of fun meeting him, and we've sort of stayed in touch since. And he and his family now have a podcast. It's the Pizza Go Here podcast, and I've put links in the show notes to both of these fine podcasts. Pizza Go Here is a family show. It's a lot of fun. If you've got a family, you can totally relate to what the Beckwiths go through. So here is listener Matt from the Pizza Go Here podcast.
David, hey, this is Matt from Northern California, and just wanted to call and say congratulations on hitting episode 100. Just realizing that that's coming up here pretty soon, and just wanted to say thanks for all the great work on the Fredcast. I love the show. I think I've been listening maybe a year and a half or so, something like that. Absolutely love your show, love your special, your coverage of the Tour of California, and all the other great stuff you do out there. So just wanted to say thank you very much. Definitely appreciate it, and hoping for the next 100 to come. Anyway, take care, David. See ya.
And Matt, thank you so much for listening and for being a good friend of the show, and also for your podcast. I've got links in the show notes to both gentlemen's podcast. I think that you will enjoy them. Well, at long last, with over an hour and 30 minutes in this show, it is time to wrap up episode 100 I'm coming to the finish line of my first century of the Fredcast. Before I go, just want to, as always, let you know how you can contact the Fredcast. Of course, we've talked a little bit about Twitter here, but we didn't talk about the Fredcast Twitter. The Fredcast is twitter.com/Fredcast, or you can send a text message to 40404 with the words follow Fredcast to follow my daily Twitterings about everything Fredcast and everything going on in the podcast and in my life. Of course, we love to get your emails and your audio comments. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. You can send text or audio comments there, or you can send a voicemail, just like listener Matt and listener Kiefer B did today, and listener Joel. The listener hotline is area code 435-258-6FRED. That's 435-258-6373. Or if you'd like to save on toll charges, just go on to Skype, and the handle is TheFredCast. And please visit our website at www.thefredcast.com for the next couple of weeks for the Daily Tour podcast, for daily results from the Tour de France, and the occasional blogs from your podcast host and producer. That would be me. Now, before we get out of here, as we do every week, it is time for PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music comes to us, as it usually does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Today's song is entitled Day One, aptly titled because this is day one of the next 100 podcasts for the Fredcast. The band is called Now Is Now from their album, Never Go Back. I have links in the show notes to where you can find their website, where you can find them on the Podshow site, and where you can purchase their music on iTunes. Well, that's going to do it for the 100th episode of the Fredcast, the first 100 shows. I can't wait to be with you for the next 100 and more of the Fredcast. Between now and then, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
About the child singing the song, I'm running through a fountain on a warm spring day, hooray. And time is climbing on the same old man over here singing the song, while strumming my guitar here on a warm spring day, hooray. I think of the children that we were. Seems like a long time ago, but a simple thing like the first day of spring. Oh yeah, yeah. Come on, yeah, yeah. Sing her now, yeah, yeah. Today I love everything. Talk about those birds up there, they're singing their song. We're kicking off our shoes here on a warm spring day, hooray. Now lover, you're so strong, riding out this winter chill for so long. Come on now, rip off your clothes with me and roll in the hay, hooray, hooray. Long time ago, but a simple